Howdy, friends. This is Annie Fonte, and you are listening to the Badass Soul Seeking Warrior podcast. On each episode, I chat with a different guest and ask them to share their stories about what they were doing before they decided to redesign their lives, what they are doing now, and how they navigated through the various challenges and events in their life to get to where they are today. What realizations and transformations did they experience? What fears did they overcome? And ultimately, how did they create a life they love? Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Badass Soul Seeking Warrior podcast, where we talk about entrepreneurship, leadership, and creating a life that we love. You're going to really love our guest today. Her name is Talia Walsh. She is an entrepreneur. She's a musician. She is a beautiful singer. She's a speaker and a whole bunch of other things. And so we're going to get into that today. Talia, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. This is exciting.
I'm happy to have you here. And for you and for our listeners and for myself, I want to ask us all to take a big, deep breath in and get settled in. So here we go. Big breath in and release that. And so my first question and the most important question for you and our listeners, Talia, is how are you today?
I'm doing great today. It's been a beautiful, productive morning so far. So I know I'm a couple hours ahead of you time-wise, but it's been a great day so far. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I just finished working out, and I do have to take my little Australian Shepherd to the vet this afternoon. He's got some things going on and we'll deal with that. But other than that, everything is good.
Friday, we can't complain.
Yeah. And for all of you listening, Talia is joining us from Jessup, Pennsylvania, which is north and west a tad bit from Philadelphia, up in the northeastern part of the state of Pennsylvania. So let's start here, Talia. You started being musical at a very young age. You started out playing the violin, which why not start with something really difficult, right? So lay some groundwork for us here. Talk to us a little bit about your childhood and when you started playing the violin and that led into singing and how that's progressed over the years.
Absolutely. So I was born in Scranton. A lot of people know Scranton on the map from The Office, the show. But my parents were born in this area, and we moved just outside of Philadelphia in Westchester area, Levittown. And so in that area of Pennsylvania, they start you really young in music. They test your ability of hearing to see if you have relative pitch, perfect pitch. And so I was tested in kindergarten, which they didn't really do around our area where I live now. And I tested for relative pitch, which is being able to recognize if the note is off, high, low, perfect pitch. If I say sing a C, I could sing a C and know that it's that note. And so they fit you for instruments. So as soon as you're big enough to fit an instrument, based on the pitch that you test for, violin is really important to have good pitch. So they wanted me to start in violin. So I started on a quarter violin in first grade. So they start you in music in kindergarten. In our area, they start you in fourth, fifth, or sixth grade. So when I moved back to Scranton in fourth, fifth grade, I was already playing for 4 or 5 years. So ahead of the curve. So I ended up doing lessons and playing with local colleges and playing all throughout high school and college, but just a little bit ahead. So music, violin was really my introduction, was an instrument rather than just music class and singing. So that's how I got started.
Well, you have me beat because I don't think I could carry a tune in a bucket, number one. And our school didn't do the pitch testing, but if you were interested in being in the band, you could go have the band leader, you know, talk to you about that. I told the band leader that I thought I wanted to play the clarinet, and he had me do a few things. And he said, you know, I'm not so sure this would be a good idea for you. So I was kind of cut loose pretty quickly on any kind of musical talent. So I always appreciate those who have it. So you played the violin for how long?
I still play violin today. I play for weddings and sometimes funerals, not as competitively as I did as a child. I played violin only, no other instruments, up until middle school. And one thing I learned that I didn't know growing up, no one told me, was that when you play a lot, I was playing sometimes 3-4 hours a day practicing, that you actually could like wear out the muscles. It's like overusing your muscles in your hands. So I had a hard time holding pencils to take tests, and went to a hand doctor to find out what was going on. They're like, you need to stop playing violin for a couple months and rehab your hand. So I had to go to hand therapy, which I'm like, I didn't even know that's a thing. Yeah. And so they tried to put me in band, and I could French horn specifically because of relative pitch. I couldn't get anything to come out of the horn. I wasn't very good with the instrument itself. Uh-huh. So they put me in chorus, and I would sing in my room and sing by myself. I loved Mariah Carey at the time, but everyone in class, I think I was in seventh grade then, had to try out for the play called The Clowns, and I got the lead in the play. Wow. And so my mom was like, she doesn't sing. I'm like, apparently I can. And so I started singing in seventh grade, and I sang for church from seventh grade till now, and I'm 41 now, so it's been a long time.
And you were the lead singer in some bands along the way.
Helped pay for college. I started with a rock band when I was 20, and then transitioned into wedding bands, and then did some duo stuff with a friend, Dan, and we've done some recording and just kind of transitioned. Right now, mostly I sing for weddings, cocktail hours and ceremonies, sometimes funerals, and national anthem a lot.
Yeah, you travel around a bit doing the national anthem, and you're kind of into the, not motocross, what's it called?
Supercross.
Say again?
Supercross. It's motocross inside of a stadium. I actually just sang on Saturday at the Lincoln Financial, the Philadelphia Eagles stadium.
Yeah.
For Supercross. Yeah. And that was super exciting.
That's great. And so people just know of you and they get in touch with you to come to sing the national anthem at these events? Is that how that works?
Locally, that's pretty much how it works. When you get into that level, like singing for NASCAR or NFL or baseball, a lot of those organizations have like tryout application processes. With Supercross, it was having an application sent in with recordings and just waiting. And you meet enough people and you go enough times, is trying to make those connections, which has been really helpful. I have now a connection through Supercross and through NASCAR. Now that I sang at the Eagles Stadium, I really like the Eagles. So I'm like, okay, how do I get to sing for the Eagles? I've done some of like the AAA Yankees and Phillies teams. I've done the Phillies before when I was younger, but it's a process. Sometimes it's just making connections and getting to know people and put it out there. You don't necessarily get paid to sing for those events, but you get, you know, perks to see the stadium in a way other people couldn't pay to do. And just to have the experience to sing in front of that many people, which can be nerve wracking. And
because that's tens of thousands of people.
Yeah. Wow. NASCAR was the most. I think there were 125,000 plus on national television. And that can get very, that actual performance, it was 97 degrees. And as women, we try to wear things that look flattering. And I had to wear this like chicken cutlet sticky bra, and it slipped right off right before I had to sing on television. So I had to quick put on someone else's bra underneath my dress before I went on live TV. And so I think I was more panicked about that. That doesn't normally happen. So I've learned real quick dress codes for national anthem in the weather. It makes you more conscious.
I've always said stardom and celebrity isn't all it's cracked up to be. There are times when it can get a little dicey, right?
Mm-hmm. That was my closest call to date so far. And I hope I never get there again.
Then you went on and you put an album out in 2018, right?
It's called This Year.
So you have your first CD came out then, and was it mostly Christmas songs, or was it a combination, or holiday songs, or was it a combination of other things as well?
It was a combination of almost like a Christian inspirational music tied into the holidays. So the first song written, actually I brought it upstairs with me, was called Away for Christmas. And then my friend Dan and I, who's an exceptional songwriter, helped write the music. I gave him ideas for lyrics of, and themes of stuff, and he went with that. And so it's a more, we play a lot more around the holidays to promote the CD at that time.
Right.
But it was started with a Christmas song.
Beautiful. And do you have anything else coming up that we can look forward to?
Yeah, but I would like to. When I was a kid growing up for Christmas, we didn't have a lot. So it was like, what could I make for my family that I could give to them? So I would record Christmas CDs for my family and put them on, burn them on my computer and get and make a cover. I'd draw them or print them out as I got older. So I have a lot of like those, but they weren't my songs or our songs. They were Christmas songs or different renditions of them. So I made a bunch of those as a kid, growing up all through middle and high school when I figured out I could sing. But I think it would be a good time to start thinking about doing a sequel to this year.
Sure. And you know, there's nothing better than a gift like that, a homemade gift. And it's really you sharing your talents with the people that you love. And you can't go buy that at some store somewhere. So I think that's a terrific idea. Okay, let's jump into the entrepreneurship. Prior to opening your own business in 2017, you were working in corporate fitness. Is that correct? Can you walk us through your path up to starting your own business?
I went to college actually for speech pathology. I did my bachelor's degree. In singing through high school, I had ruptured a blood vessel on my vocal cords. So my career thought of being famous and all that, I lost my voice for about a year. So I had to go to Philadelphia for speech therapy. And that's how I got into speech. But in speech, I was in the same building as exercise physiology. I never really was into fitness in high school because I was so involved with music. And my roommate was a lacrosse player. So we would go to the gym and I really loved fitness. And in speech, a lot of your work time is spent in rehab and recovery. And I was like, it was very heavy for me. And so I'm like, I wonder if I can be more in the health prevention side of it. So I did my master's in exercise physiology at Bloomsburg. And right after school, I had worked in chiropractic and then into wellness coaching and chiropractic and posture rehab, and then transitioned into corporate wellness. So I had the opportunity to actually work with my mom. She was a programmer at MetLife, and I worked with a subcontracting company where this client was our client, and I ran all the health and wellness services for that location. So there were about 670 some employees, and so we'd run health fairs and blood pressure screenings, health seminars, teach classes, manage our staff and the locker amenities and the equipment, order equipment, create programming, wellness programs. So I really loved doing that. There's not a lot of money in that field. So I had started a little like plan B coaching through a supplement company that I did as an independent distributor. And I did really well with that. And I said, I wish that the gyms in our area had the same format or programming that our gym had at this corporate gym that the public couldn't join. You, if you wanted nutrition, you had to go here. If you wanted yoga, you had to go to this place. If you wanted training, you had to go here. I'm like, I wish we could just have it all in one place. So when I
one-stop shopping. Yeah, I agree.
Exactly. So when I decided to open Quest Studio and take that leap of faith to leave that security of that corporate job, that's kind of where Quest Studio, guiding you in health and fitness. And we look at our logo. Our Quest Studio has a North Star, like a guiding star in center, and it creates four quadrants of the queue. And with that, at Quest, you can come for fitness, for nutrition, for recovery, like body recovery, body work, or accountability. And so that's kind of how Quest became to be, just trying to have that one-stop shop for our community. and have me be in one place rather than teaching all over the place. Because that when I made that leap, I was teaching at like four different gyms and studios and still singing and waitressing and corporate. I'm like, I just need one place, one home. So
yeah, that makes sense. So that was in November. That'll be 7 years ago. And I think if my time in my math and timing in my math is correct, 5 years ago, you bought a church. And now you operate your business out of your church, which is where you're sitting today. You're sitting in the area where the altar would generally be in a church, in the area where you do yoga. I am going to put a link in the show notes for all of you listening. This church is beautiful. And Talia does a beautiful yoga class on the upper floor. And then on the lower floor, you have some of your stretching and other modalities that you do with folks. And you also live at the church. Is that correct?
I do.
Okay. So let's talk about this church. How did this church come into your life?
So I went to a yoga class at another studio to audition a new instructor, and it was in an old cathedral that was converted into a dance academy, which I thought was the coolest thing. I'm like, I want a church, but I want one that's like a quarter of the size. And a week later, one of our friends had bought a house that's, if you go out the church doors and look through the yard, his house is across the street. And I was doing a tour of this new house, and it was April, 5 years ago. And I looked through the backyard. I'm like, has that always been there? It's this long, cute little narrow church. And he said, yeah, they still have ring the bells on Sunday. And it was still open, and it's a block from my original studio. So I had no idea after 3.5 years that it was here. And I took a picture of it, made it my screensaver, and I was like, watch, in a couple of years, we'll have our studio. I'm going to be your neighbor. Not realizing that that years from now turned into a month from then. Wow. And I happened to ask about it. So it turned out that they were actually going to be closing in June 9th. And so the two women who showed me the building, one since has passed. The other I just had coffee with 2 weeks ago. She's 90, Margie. And they wanted it to stay something for the community. They didn't want it to be torn down or turned into apartments, like a complex. And so I said, what about a yoga studio and keep it a community building? And they loved that. So it was kind of a God wink that I had put it out in the universe. And a week later, it turned up in the backyard pretty much of my studio. I can see my other building, which we still operate out of, up the street. So living here was not the original plan. But we bought the church in 2019 in October. We opened soft opening in January of 2020. And then 3 months later, we were shut down for a year. So I had my house that I lived in. I had land that I had bought to build a cabin to do wellness retreats and teach paddleboard yoga. And the company that I was working with as my plan B, which became my plan A, the day that I walked through this church to look at it, to buy it, that company announced they had a lawsuit, and I basically lost my job. So it was all these like moving parts. And my coach, Larry, at the time was like, you need to be taking care of this building. And he helped me through so many different processes to make that happen, along with people close to me here in construction and helping get it to where it needed to be. But in that interim during the COVID time frame, I sold about 90% of my stuff, including my house and my dream property and all this stuff that I don't really need and can't take with me when I'm gone. So I sold it all and used that to renovate the downstairs so that I can live here until we figure out what the next steps are. And so that's why I live here. But it's a beautiful space. Margie, who I just had coffee with, had said, she's like, I said, I'm so happy that God picked you to take care of the church. Aww. And I think that's like super happy on my heart to hear, because I feel like it's not mine granted, we own it, but I'm just grateful that he picked me to take care of it because it's such a beautiful and special place for this community. It's the oldest church in Jessup, and it's a very small town here, but this town is very strong in tradition and history here. So it's nice to be part of that, to be able to share this building with them and have it be part of community events and stuff.
Yeah, that's great. It's a beautiful space. And I tell you, listening to you and those who are listening, this is what happens when you decide to be an entrepreneur, everyone. There are a lot of ups and there are a lot of downs. And all of us, the whole globe was affected by this COVID pandemic that we all went through. And it was, I'm an entrepreneur. I own a physical therapy and wellness clinic in San Diego. We were considered an essential business, so we were able to stay open, but our business was off 75%. And those are the times when it really tests your mettle as to, okay, what are we going to do? What adjustments can we make? How are we going to get to the other side of this and keep our team solid and cohesive? And so I'm curious what other challenges you've faced as an entrepreneur as you went about starting your business, because they're out there. And I like our people who are thinking about starting businesses who are existing entrepreneurs. We're all in this together. We all go through these times. So what other challenges have you faced and how have you gotten to the other side of those?
I think the biggest thing from an entrepreneur standpoint, especially with my business being a lot of the services and things we offered here at Quest were things that I had passions about. And I went and got trained and be the best person in our area to do them, but they require me and my time. And so if I want someone to be able to come in and help me to teach classes so that I can be doing the things that I'm best at, especially when it comes to running the business, I went to school for speech pathology and exercise physiology, not business. So I hired a business coach. So having your team of people that can do the things that they're really good at, and so that you can do the things you're really good at. I try to do all of the, wear all the hats. And what I've learned now as the studio has grown and as people, you have people that will come and go on your team, instructors, you know, got married or had children or switched locations. And so you have to find people that are good at what they do, that want to do that work with you and join your team. So it's creating that culture and community for both your team and the people who come to your studio or to your business to use your services. But I think the big thing was learning to not try to wear all the hats, because when you run out of time and you find like, I don't have any more time to wear those hats, then who can I pass that on to, or how do I simplify? I would say that that's been the biggest challenge, is me handing the trophy to someone else or the torch to someone else to help run some of the parts of the business so that I can really do the parts that I enjoy doing the most, that I feel like have the most impact, especially currently in the body work and stuff that we do now.
Yeah, and it's difficult to run a business when 90% of it relies on you being there, you being the worker bee, you doing the everything. It's not very scalable that way. And if we can create things that are repeatable or teachable to others so they can serve more people, it allows our businesses to help more than just one person at a time. We can have a lot more ripple effect if we pull ourselves out of the intense day-to-day. What's been the most rewarding for you being an entrepreneur?
Helping people, to be honest. I have a knack for teaching and talking and being in front of people, call it being a performer. Singing, I enjoy doing. I feel like it's a gift that I've been given, and music in general. I feel like a lot of the things I've, you know, endured throughout my life, those situations and experiences give me a story to help be empathetic and relatable to my community and my clients in doing body work, taking care of our bodies, no matter what happens throughout our life. Especially when it comes to exercise, I've learned really quick that when people want to lose 10 pounds versus saying, I want to lose weight, they have a more specific goal. But usually the thing that gets in the way of them reaching those goals, whether it comes business, losing weight, budgeting, like whatever that goal is, it's because stuff during life has happened and it's taken us away from the things we need to be doing to reach those goals. And that I feel like I can really well to, but giving, you know, teaching in a way that gives them small tangible things they can do. I do a lot of body work now, fascial stretch therapy, Thai massage, where I'm hands-on sharing my energy with them and taking on their energy. And a lot of them are in pain. So I think now having learned, you know, always being one for sense of feel and emotion and touch, I feel like doing this kind of body work versus just teaching a fitness class, I like to teach in a certain way, but doing that hands-on work and teaching groups and teaching teachers how to teach others to do little things that no matter what's happening around them, that they can still move forward and not go backwards or be stuck in where they're at.
Yeah, there's the expression, you've heard it, probably a lot of our listeners have heard it, it's you eat an elephant one bite at a time. And I think that type of coaching to people, your clients and the people that you teach classes to and your team that helps with your services is, let's encourage people to, if you want to lose 10 pounds, let's lose this a pound at a time. Let's not, I think having that focus of 10 pounds out there is great, but let's walk our way to it in a way that we're going to stick with it. And then we'll have some joy along the way and we'll accomplish that. And then over time you build good habits around it as well, instead of the fast and easy way sometimes. And I know there's a lot of things when it comes to weight loss these days that that are a little questionable out there, but I like that philosophy very much. Let's talk about your speaking. You gave a talk that's on YouTube at an Empower conference, and it was called Being Fearless in Work, Love, and Life. And I'll have to say, I watched this. It's such a great talk, Talia. And for all you listeners out there, I will put the link to this in the show notes as well. Talia is funny. She's very entertaining, and she has a beautiful way of really putting her arms around her audience, and her audience just loves her back. But the thing that was very compelling to me when I watched your talk, Talia, was at the pretty much the beginning of your talk, you asked the group several questions. And I think those would be good to share with our listeners today because they were pretty impactful. And if you're driving or walking or something, I don't want you to, unless you can, stop. But go back and re-listen to this, or go listen to Talia's talk on YouTube and write these questions down and consider them, because I think they were really, really great. But can you remember what they are and share some of them with us?
You wrote them down too. I love to know who I'm talking to when I'm talking to an audience. So I always ask, you know, who's married, who's single, who's widowed, who has kids, who are empty nesters, who's working their dream job, who loves their job. If they were sitting next to their boss, I told them not to answer. They didn't, or answer even if they didn't. I asked them how often they vacation. Like, do they have a plan B income? How many of them have ever gone through something in their life that has, whether it was cancer, they lost someone, they almost lost their own life. How many of them, I think, was the most impactful? How many of you are comfortable in your own skin?
Yes.
And I'd say those last two, and I'm sure there were a few others, but I know the last two are the most heavy. And I think only a very small handful of people, which you can see in the video, actually raised their hand when it came to being comfortable in their own skin. And I wasn't surprised by that, but I was surprised. The room had probably 450, mostly women and men. And we all are our biggest critics when it comes to our image, and our, what we feel and think about ourselves. But I think the question prior to that is, you know, who's gone through all these things? That goes back to what I say of, you know, people go through all these obstacles that get in their way of doing the things that make them feel the most comfortable. I think I asked, you know, what's your goal weight? When's the last time you weighed that much? You know, are they realistic goals? and things like that? Because that's a question I ask a lot with my clients. You know, if you were at this goal weight, what were the things you were doing then? You know, if you were at your business, was that your best? What things were you doing in your business then versus what you're doing now? But I'd say those two questions were the most impactful as far as making people be in the room to think, you know, all those things you have to be fearless about, whether it's in work, in your love relationships, or just in life, that, you know, those are the things
like
that we
have to. When you ask how many were married, single, divorced, you ask the question, are you happily married? Or are you going through the motions, right? Because this is really about inspiring people to live their best life. And I also I had to chuckle when you said, and many of us have heard this as well, you are as good as the five people you surround yourself with. And you ask anybody if they had five kids.
It's true.
You spend time with other people other than your five kids, because that might be tampering you down a little bit. But I thought those were really good questions. And I don't know, in your speaking and some of the coaching you do, is there a common thread that you've noticed or observed that keeps people from being comfortable in their own skin?
I guess because I'm a coach and because I teach fitness and wellness, a lot of times it's that life is in the way. Like, they have all the stress from all the responsibilities. And I feel like as women in general, we wear a lot more hats and we hold the weight of the world on our shoulders and we have to take care of everyone. And so what happens a lot of times, I feel like they take less care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And I'm guilty of that. You know, I'm taking care of so many of my clients. I have to really block off the time to do things that feel my body and feel my soul, like doing this today with you. And it's hard to do that. But I think that not doing that and having all that stress, as you know, you don't get to do the things that make you feel strong and feel comfortable and confident too. I think it's a level of confidence. And I may see myself very differently the way other people see me. And I feel like that's a guilty of a lot of people. And I think it really comes to who your circle is, like who you spend time with and what you're fueling your brain and with. And, you know, what are you listening to and reading, and who are you spending time with? And in that particular talk that you're mentioning, that's a lot of what we talked about.
Right. And we all go through really challenging times in our lives. And I think, you know, one of the things I teach in a year-long course that I offer to folks, is one of the intentions, if you will, is to view every experience as a gift. And sometimes we have to let the dust settle from that event, whatever it might be, in order to really realize and embrace what the gift of it was. And so you've had challenges in your life. One which you've been very open and honest about is you were engaged. And this fellow was a sergeant. His name was Jan Argonish, and he was killed in action in Afghanistan in August of 2007. You'd been together a couple years prior to that. So how did you get through that? Because, you know, you were young and in love and found this fellow that you wanted to spend the rest of your life with. By the way, just so y'all know, I'm wearing my camo coat today in admiration and gratefulness for what Jan did. He was part of the National Guard. And was he on his second or third deployment when he died?
Second deployment overseas, third activation.
Okay.
First was here in was 9/11. He was activated here to do security in our area for like the airports and the power plants and stuff like that. And then Iraq was his first out of state or out of the states deployment. And I met him right after he came back. And then he volunteered for this second deployment, activation, and left in 2006.
Yeah. And he was killed during an ambush in the Kunar province of Afghanistan. And he was only 26 at the time. So also, we're going to kind of go back to the beginning of our conversation, your music and and singing career. The same day that Jen was killed, you tried out on American Idol, correct?
I did. I was in Philadelphia when he was killed, and I had been up for 3 days waiting in line to get my yellow paper to go back on Monday morning. And a blessing in disguise because of the time change of deployment. So I was awake normally when I would be asleep when he was awake in most parts of our day. So I actually got to talk to him. He had just been home for his sister's wedding a month prior, and he had just gotten back into Afghanistan. So I got to talk to him more that weekend than I had the rest of his 9 months prior to that. So he was scheduled to be on an 18-month deployment, and I was sleeping, and I remember waking up at 12:52 and like, something's wrong. And didn't really think anything of it, but I couldn't go back to sleep. And we get in the car and we drove back to the Wachovia Arena, and we stood in line and tried out. And the producer at the table was like, you know, stepped aside and said, "Whatever it is you're doing, please keep doing it. You're not the like look we're looking for this year, so please come back next year," which I never did. I think it was more, it was like, I don't want to use that story in order to get somewhere. That's not who I am.
Right.
I hate it. But I got home, and within an hour, got a knock on the door from his parents that he had been killed around the time when I woke up in the middle of the night. It was like 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning there. And they had been ambushed. So he had died along with two other U.S. soldiers and two Afghan soldiers. So from that point forward, it's been a whirlwind. You had asked, you know, how do you get through that? I don't know that I think I'm still going through that. And it's going to be 17 years, but obviously it looks different over time. It's surrounding yourself with people. And I think the most important is taking care of yourself. There are a lot of terrible choices I've made along the way. But taking care of myself has been the best phases of the process, and having something positive to focus on and utilizing that grief or that pain. Getting everyone together, for me, it's been doing community service or work, fundraising in honor of Jan's sacrifice to help support other veterans. So pouring my energy into that process and getting all of that organization planned helped take the focus off of negative choices and habits, and just putting it into something. Jan was never a person who would ever want recognition. And I know that so well. And that wasn't, we chose to do a motorcycle ride. In the very beginning, there were dozens of benefits. Jan has a son who is now 25, and he was 8 at the time. So there was just so much outpouring of support from our community. But I'm like, we need one. If we're going to do something every year, it needs to be one thing. And I would rather it be something that Jan supported when he was alive. Motorcycle rides were one of them. Mm-hmm. And he loved going to do the ride and then have a bite to eat and come home. And so we started the Sergeant Jan Argonish motorcycle ride in 2008. And we did it every September, the Sunday, first day of football. And that, you know, I didn't expect it to be as big as it is, but it wasn't because of me. It was Jan's sacrifice. And there are a lot of, in the beginning, we used the funds to do like care packages for injured veterans. We unfortunately had a few casualties after Jan in our area that affected our county, and some individuals who had amputations, injuries. So we did care packages for them. And then it transitioned into doing funds for organizations that would help local veterans. Now we've become more of the emergency fund for like our local VA hospital, Veterans Affairs, the veterans' homeless shelters. So people, I just got a phone call today, right before I met on with you, about looking for a chairlift for veterans. So it's we've just kind of become the emergency fund. So we did the ride for 15 years. Last year, we transitioned to a day of remembrance. I couldn't not do the ride or do nothing, because that's really our time for like Jam's teammates to get together and the family. But the family was ready to retire the ride itself. I might be able to convince them year 20 maybe to do one more. It's a lot of work, yes. But we provide, especially through the studio now, I tried to tie in our studio philanthropy work through Jan's ride. So if the community still wants to donate to help our local veterans, we provide opportunities throughout the year to do that. That way there's still funds to, because there's always going to be a need, unfortunately. So we want to provide people that have the resources that they want to give. They're just not sure where to give it to. That's what Jan's Ride organization is used for as now, which has been great. It just looks a little different, but that's helped me a lot, I think, just in having that support. Not that it's for me. It's, you know, I'm happy to, even though it's a lot of spotlight and sometimes pressure to run that ride. And for so long, I would, you, if you asked me 17 years ago if I'd still be doing that, I would have said we're not making it past five. It's a lot of pressure, and yeah, people are watching, and you're on the news all the time. And if you're trying to be in a relationship where you're constantly tied to your past, it makes it challenging until you find the right person who's willing to support you no matter what.
Right.
And that's important. So it's had its pressure, but grateful to be able to do something positive for our community in my loss, and in more importantly, most importantly, Jan's loss, because he's lost everyone. So it's I don't think Jan would be mad us.
No, he wouldn't be mad. And you've raised over these years $450,000 plus or minus dollars. You've helped a lot of folks, and I think it helps other veterans get past some of the grief they have too, of buddies they lost, or even injuries they've sustained, or people's friends that have been in military. And you know, Jan sounds like he was a pretty terrific guy. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been with him, I know. And he wrote a lot of the songs on your first CD, correct?
We took the letters that he had written to me on during his deployment. And Dan and I, Away for Christmas was more about the story of being away, like Jan being away, and the message I would send, you know, to someone who's has someone overseas that's away. Cause it's, you know, it's so hard for them, but it's hard for us too. Right. And I feel like it's harder for them when they're away from everyone. And I'm just away from him. The rest of the CD was using like the lessons and messages that I had learned, that I'd shared with Dan from the letters, and just that time that we were together, even though it was very short, it was very much impactful of the whole trajectory of the direction my life has gone since then and since losing him. And so it's not that Jan wrote the lyrics, more that his words
that's great. It's such a great memory. And I also, it sounds to me like he had kind of a good sense of humor, unlike or very similar to yours, because when you guys got engaged, instead of an engagement ring, what did you get?
Four wheels.
Because I know he's into motorcycles and the four wheel ATVs or whatever they're called. So he asked you a question, though. He brought you in to make the decision, right?
Yeah. So him and his son at the time, with a formal engagement, they had planned for the two of them to do something special. But he had bought a quad for him and for his son. And while he was home on leave, and he said, I want to get you both, but I already bought these two, so I can't afford both. So which one do you prefer? And I'm like, well, I want a quad. Like, I'm not going anywhere. So I'll do the four wheels. So we went and picked out got a used quad, and I still have it. And it's right behind this wall outside. And yeah, I got to ride a very short time with him, but got to continue to ride with his son for a bit. And I just haven't gotten rid of her yet. She's still running. And, but yeah, so it was like our informal, you know, engagement prior to a formal engagement, which when it comes down to it, doesn't matter as much as that's who you plan to do life with, whatever that looks like. Pieces of paper and stuff don't really matter as much as the experiences and the memories you guys get to make. If anything, I wish that I had more memories, but even though it's been so long, I feel like since he's passed, it feels like he's still here and part of it. I feel like he's kind of guided me on this journey to where I am and where I live and where I've put my studios. And it's so strange, but it's no coincidences in my heart. I feel like it's just him and God's way of saying, that's okay, right. Here's where you go.
Nothing like the quad behind the church. Right. You can roll out on lunch hour and you can think of Jan as you let the wind blow through your hair. That's such a great story. So I would like to share with us, how do you celebrate your wins, whether they're big or small? When something comes that we could call a win, what do you do to celebrate?
I think the big thing is recognizing that you like have those wins and aha moments. One thing I do with the coaching program, I'm part of the Todd Durkin Mastermind, and I chose to invest in myself and my business to do that. As every week, we call them our WLAGs, like recognizing our wins for the week and our losses and our aha moments, and then our goals, you know, for the upcoming week. Even if it's just doing it once a month, I think it's just, sometimes it's sharing it, you know, whether it's I've accomplished a certification that I've been working towards. Can I gift, you know, that service to someone who can't afford it? Or, you know, we have a new space. Can we host, you know, I have a baby sprinkle coming here on Sunday for a friend. You know, they needed a space. I'm like, well, what perfect place then to do it in the church, you know? So just being able to share it with people that can matter to. I feel like that's, and just recognizing it. Cause sometimes we do all these, I mean, I do a lot of different things, and I don't think it matters more what you do when people aren't watching.
Yes.
And not necessarily doing things for recognition. I've always been involved in a lot of random things, and I've explained it to people as like walking the yellow brick road on, what's that movie called? Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Wizard of Oz.
So I think of like my life. Sometimes I'm like, why am I doing this thing right now, or this project, or this certification, or this concert, or this whatever? And then maybe 3 months from now or 3 years from now, someone's like, oh, I really need to connect with someone who does this. And I'm like, oh, that yellow brick lights up. Like, oh, that one random thing I said, why am I doing this?
Yes.
Now connects to this part of the yellow brick road that's like, okay, it's not for nothing. And so I think it's just being able to recognize those wins for yourself, not necessarily for recognition.
Yeah, and I think we as entrepreneurs, and I think people in general, we tend to not have that awareness or that recognition, even for the smallest things that are wins. That, you know, there's people in this world right now that don't have enough water to drink today. And their little ones are going out with a pail on their head to see if they can find water so their family can survive another day. And we, you know, we get grumpy if the drive-through takes more than 3 minutes to get through. So I think we really have to be aware of those things and have those little grow moments and glow moments, because if not, our level of appreciation and gratitude goes down, and then the wholesomeness and the, you know, the joyfulness of living life can get watered down as well. So it's good to hear that you have that attention toward awareness. And I think if my research serves me properly, part of your mastermind group, you were considered the mastermind person of the month, right? This month?
Yeah. Yes. In March, I was announced as the member of the month. I've been part of Todd's mastermind for 6 years. So almost 6 years. So it's been, and I think part of that recognition was in speaking to the group and sharing some of my experience through corporate wellness and how to incorporate that into their studios and brick and mortar gyms or throughout their community. I do really think that when it comes to like celebrating wins and even like in the studio, community service has always been the one thing that's been, I think it's just been ingrained in my heart as even as a kid, like just going with my church to go to do mission work or go join the Catholic services in college and serve meals every Tuesday or volunteer at Special Olympics every Wednesday with the sorority. Like it's just always been, I felt best doing that. There's so many people that no matter what I've gone through, I know someone's going through something worse at the moment. And I can complain about things or I can be grateful for the opportunities and memories and what I have. But I also work very hard for things. So I think it's just looking at those situations. How can you help give back? Even if it's just showing another business how to take what I've learned and that expertise and how do you use it? So it's nice to get the recognition, but it also is I'm doing what my job I feel like is I'm meant to do is to share. I have a platform in a sense of being in the limelight from being a performer, owning a business, volunteering in work with veterans. You know, I don't always enjoy being in the limelight. Sometimes I like to just have my own, you know, go to a restaurant or a baby shower recently and someone comes up, she's like, "Are you Talia? Did you speak at this thing?" I'm like, "Oh, I just want to hide in the corner or not go to the grocery store." I'm like, "You're the girl from the news." So but if that's where my calling is to use, my name's Talia. It's hard to hide. And just be able then to use that to help, you know, share my story. I performed and talked in front of hundreds and hundreds of people all the time until Empower, when I was like, oh gosh, I have to talk about myself and like my own. That was really the first true time where I, and that's 5 years ago, where I'm like, I don't want to talk about myself. Like, I want to talk about wellness. But then I'm like, well, I kind of have to tell my story because people know my story if they know me from the area. But there's a lot of people that have probably gone through stuff just like me or worse that maybe could have an impact in their community because of it and just haven't had the platform or know with on how to do it. Not that I know how to do it in any certain way. It's just if my story can impact one person, then to make a better version of themselves, you know, or impact their community because of it in a positive way, then
yeah,
it's worth.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think the thing that I appreciate most about you and other people like you is your authenticity. You're not trying to be someone you're not. You're not out there for any level of recognition that you deserve or maybe don't deserve. You're just really comfortable in your own skin. And as well known as you are, I'm curious to know if you were to spend the day with someone you didn't know and they didn't know you, how would their life be different having spent a day with you?
I would just hope that maybe my story of getting to know theirs. I kind of had to do this yesterday as an exercise, share a 2.5 minute story with someone who I didn't know. That 2.5 minutes can impact their life in some way, or that day could help them make either get rid of something they no longer need or incorporate something that they need more of, and that it would do the same for me. Like, so there's something about their story can impact me. I love to talk to strangers and random people. And I think it's just building connections and relationships to get to learn from them. And if something I do inspires them to do the same, it's always great. I've met so many people traveling, especially this past 2 years. Since I turned 40, it's like, where can I go next? and I've met so many people where the places I've gotten to travel, or where I choose to travel, or I invest in myself to travel or go for trainings, like I'm staying with, you know, example, I met a person in New York at a concert who I ended up staying with in Nashville, who then helped me get, like, it's like this one person I met for 2 hours now is my friend, and I've met all these other people through them and have opportunities in other areas of places of the country that I love. So getting to just connect with them. There's so many people outside this little circle of our town. And maybe I'm more in tune to that because I lived in Philly and then here. But I wish that I lived all over the place. Like, I would love to do that. So I think it's just being able to make your circle bigger through taking that leap. I know that in some scenarios, like, I'm not married and I don't have kids, so I can have the flexibility with my having my own schedule. So it's not as easy for other people. So if they can do that in even a little way within their own community, they don't have to go to Nashville. But it's just, you know, being the mastermind's been great for me for that, because you meet people country and getting to sing and meet people from all over that enjoy the same sport. So just doing more of the things that you enjoy doing. I think that's been the most enjoyable for that. Meeting new people. I would just hope that it would be, you know, whatever comes out of my mouth that day, that we do something that makes a memory for them and for each other, you know, to inspire each other to just be better. And have something, remember that day, that it's a good day, because we're all going to have days that are eventually that are not going to be as good of days. And so it's having those things that you learn on the good days that you take that energy and those lessons. So when those bad days come, because they're gonna, you've got a better foundation just to stay strong. I think this building is 130 years old, and like there's a crazy storm here last week, and the building's like, I'm like, well, if it hasn't fallen down by this point, I don't think it's going anywhere. I'm like, thank goodness it's got a strong foundation.
Well, I plus you have God on your side, so that's a thing. So I really appreciate, this has been a fun conversation, and to wrap it up today, because part of what we talk about on the Badass Soul Seeking Warrior podcast is creating a life that you love. So what are three things that you would like to leave with our audience today to consider in their own lives of how to lay down this foundation and this pathway to creating a life that you love and that they could love themselves?
I would say one would be to take care of yourself. Do find the things that you need to be your best version of yourself from physical standpoint, mental, emotional, spiritual, wherever it's lacking, pick one or two things you could do to make it better. If it's just a minute or two a day or 20 minutes a day, you know, whatever that looks like, moving your body. I would say looking at who your circle is. You know, we said jokingly from my speech that you're the average of the top five people you spend the most time with. Who needs to be removed from your circle, or who needs to be added, and where can that come from? If you are an entrepreneur, that could just be even who needs to be on your team. You know, how can you, who do you need to do the things you don't want to do, or to can make you do better? And I would say thirdly, if you've gone through something, honor your own story. Like, What have you learned from your story? What have been your challenges? What have been your wins, and celebrate them yourself, whether it's journaling it, whether it's, if you've lost someone, it's going to visit them and say, I've got this, you know, or I don't got this, and help me get through it, and add those people you need into your circle. But I think just having the wins and finding a way to maybe to share it, because someone maybe needs to hear their wins. And I think that with your book, which I've just started reading, that you're like, you know, the challenges that life throws at us, they're always going to come. And it's just being able to recognize like how far you've come, whether it's been a month or a year or 10 years or 17 years. I've gone through lots of challenges even before Jan that, you know, are all part of who make us who we are. And it's not that we're necessarily defined by what's happened to us, but a lot of times we can be defined by how we handle it and what we do with it and how we give back with it or how we take from it. You know, it's those things happen to us for whatever God's reason. I've felt very strongly. I've been very strong in my faith. It rocked my faith quite a bit. Losing Jan, I'd gone to church that day and prayed for his safety, and a couple hours later, he wasn't here anymore. And yeah. I think a big part of that is being able to say, like, maybe I went through that because someone else wouldn't have been able to handle it. Or maybe I went through that because I have an opportunity to do X, Y, and Z in honor of it, because of it, that maybe someone else wouldn't have the same impact. And if that's, that helps me get through that, that's what helped me get through it. Yeah. That's what's helped do some of those things. So I think that answers.
Yes, it does. And I think that's a beautiful way to wrap things up here. I so appreciate your time today. And I encourage you to keep singing and keep serving, because you do both of those beautifully. And I, on behalf of myself, and I know many, many Americans out there, thank you for all you do for the veterans. Once again, I honor and appreciate Jan and the service and the sacrifice he made for this country. And let's stay in touch, because you're not done yet. You've got a lot more in front of you. So we'll do this again and bring the audience in to see what you're up to and what you've accomplished. And thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Thanks for taking the time even just to honor Jan for this hour. I'm sure he hears us. So I appreciate you and all you're doing with your listeners, and look forward to doing it again.
Okay, let's do it. Thank you. That's a wrap on this episode of the Badass Soul Seeking Warrior podcast, where we focus on creating a life that we love. And until we meet again, stay true and be you.